Infrastructure was on the Hays City Commission agenda this week. Hays Post reporter Becky Kaiser speaks with Vice Mayor Michael Burgess, along with City Manager Toby Doherty, about that and more on this episode of the Post Podcast.
Congratulations, Michael, on being the Vice Mayor. What are your duties as Vice Mayor? People want to know.
I pick on Mason to make sure he's at all the meetings so that way he can run them, because if he's not at the meeting, then I have to step up to the gavel, and I'm not sure I am prepared to do that.
Oh,
so
I'm sure.
Other than that, it's kind of just succession. You just kind of take your turn in the seat next to you. So,
well, we're glad to have you in that seat. Let's talk a little bit about some of the agenda items at last night's meeting. Several of them regarding development in Hays, and one of the big ones. I'm going to ask Toby a question about this, too. But first of all, let's talk about a pre-annexation agreement with a property owner of four tracts of land, Michael, just north of I-70 near the exit 157.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff that's already happened up there, and this will help with continued growth.
Yeah, that's the same exit that on the west side of that property that we annexed last night is where the truck stop and hopefully hotels and restaurants and truck wash is going. And the county's already, we've already done some road repair in that area. Now the county's also doing their bypass construction out there. So this kind of fits with that whole puzzle of developing that area, hopefully more industry to attract more trucks and kind of grow that area.
And Toby, you talked last night and also the week before about this is a little bit different type of pre-annexation agreement between the property owner of EBJ and the city of Hays. How's it different?
It's a little bit different because development typically happens like what's happening on the west side there. You have an undeveloped piece of property. A developer comes in and the city gave some financial incentives in order to help subsidize the water and sewer and road infrastructure to serve the development, and then stuff is built. This is a little different because the Peterbilt dealership located out there before there was any infrastructure at all. So they were on rural water, they were on a septic system, and they existed in the unincorporated area in the county outside the city. And at that time it was cost prohibitive for the infrastructure to be extended for a Peterbilt dealership. But with the infrastructure being pushed onto the north side of the interstate, the intersection being rebuilt essentially that fronted a lot of this property, that's when we took the opportunity, entered into negotiations with the property owner, and said, you know, with just a couple short extensions, if you're willing to cost share, a couple short extensions of infrastructure, we can get your properties ready to develop, and then we could annex the dealership into the city and get the property tax and sales tax off of that. So that's how we resulted in the agreement last night. So it was a little bit atypical, but I think it was advantageous for everybody.
And there's one other thing that you pointed out, a couple of scenarios that might delay the annexation of at least one of those tracks. There is actually a CID out there that the county has imposed.
Yeah, the property owner asked the county to institute a CID, which is a community improvement district, and they're charging an extra 2 cents, and that's to help offset some of the development cost initially when the Peterbilt dealership was put there. So the property owner has no problem coming into the city, but wanted a little bit of time to collect that 2 cent CID before asking the city to consider lowering it to make sure they're competitive. So that's why we settled on 3 years after the infrastructure is put into annex. But then there was a couple ways in which the developer could push that back a year or two if other properties are developed or if the infrastructure cost comes in lower than we planned.
And how soon might this infrastructure get underway? There are more steps. Yeah, this is kind of just the start.
So according to the agreement that was adopted last night by the commission, we have 12 months from the date of adoption before we issue the no later than 12 months will we issue the request for proposals to put the infrastructure in. And then we give the property owner some latitude to tell us go ahead and issue the RFP. So if the developer wanted to do it tomorrow, then we'll get it out as soon as possible. If the developer says let's wait 10 months and then get it out, then we're going to show some deference to them.
All right, Michael, let's talk about another area. Actually, down in South Hays, we had some interest for a relocation of a metal recycling facility, which has not been in Hays all that long, but they're looking at growth, and they want to go down to the south part of Hays. Doing that has required a rezoning request, in the area from ag to heavy industrial, and then also the final plat that the commissioners approved last night. So,
yeah, this is another development. As you said, they hadn't been in Hayes too long, but they're looking to expand their operation, and that's kind of the exciting thing about being on a commission is seeing these things. That's what we talk about for years, is to try to attract businesses and that will grow and add employment. So this made a lot of sense. It's in the industrial part of town already. So yes, it's from our standpoint a fairly simple just change from ag. I don't know what was out there, wheat fields and hay and whatnot, to allow them to build onto and build buildings for recycling. And I think they have some plans to put in a railroad spike so that way they can ship out and allow, and that was kind of the nice thing at the last meeting. They did talk about allowing other businesses to use that railroad spike to, you know, help their operations. So this is going to be a very symbiotic relationship, I think, in the community. So.
Yes. Now, we're talking about property on East 10th, 1680 East 10th, with Langer Industrial Solutions, I think is the proper name. And they've been there for the past two meetings. Toby, what that seemed like a really big deal to have a new railroad spur, and then actually they're willing to have other people utilize that. Does the city get involved with that at all?
No. Actually, the city's involvement's done now. Once the platting and zoning was adopted, the city's involvement is done.
Because it's not in the city limits,
right? So this will take place outside of the city limits in the county, as the other entities along there are not in the city limits either. So it's maintaining consistency with the development that's there. The railroad spur is a big deal, and it's fairly costly to construct. And so I think Mr. Langer wants to generate some revenue if he constructs it by letting other people utilize it. But you also need a big piece of property adjacent to railroad tracks. So you're very limited. Of how you can put a spur in, and this property actually worked out perfect for it. So we're pretty happy for them, and we think it's going to be a good asset.
And this is actually Hayes Post reporter Christina Janney did a story with Mr. Langer when they first opened up their facility much closer to I-70, East 37th Street, near the intersection up there. And this is not really more of a storage of big metal pieces that will get shipped out.
They're a commercial recycler, but I mean, if you're old enough, you remember the words junkyards or scrapyards. You know?
Sure, I'm old enough.
That's not what they are. They are a commercial recycler, but they get product in and out very quickly. They collect different types of metals, and then they process them and they get them out very quickly. That's how they make their money. They turn those. They get them to the venues where they sell them, and so the property they have up on 37th, it just isn't big enough for the scale they want. And so ever since they located on 37th, they've been looking for a larger property because they want to operate at a much larger scale than they are now.
Exciting. Let's talk a little bit about the airport. We had some information and actually approval, Michael, of more land that the city purchased. The opportunity came up to do that. It's just east of the airport, and this is fitting in extremely perfectly, I guess you'd have to say, with the airport growth plan. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it's a piece that the property owner approached us. It is a piece that makes a lot of sense because on three of the four sides already, it already abuts airport property. So this just squares it off, another 20 acres that... at this point, there's certainly no plans on what to do with it. But again, it squares it off with the property that we purchased last year for future development of the airport. I know there's going to be some talk about expanding hangars or adding hangars, a fuel farm and some of those. So this just allows the airport and the city to continue to build on those ideas.
And then, Toby, last night some good news was shared about the number of emplanements, passengers we had out at the airport last year. Maybe a little surprising.
It was. The rebound came back fairly quickly and fairly steady throughout the year. We flew a little over 11,000 passengers in 2021, and that was slightly higher than I thought we would get. But our emplanements have remained steady and steadily grown throughout 2021, so we see no sign of that slacking off in 2022.
And there is a benchmark that Hayes tries to reach and has over the years with at least 10,000 boardings. Why is that important to us?
It's a part of the FAA entitlement program. Your entitlement monies, which is your grant monies that you have entitled use to and they can't give them to somebody else, are based off of boardings. And so 10,000 boardings, we receive a guaranteed $1 million in FAA grant funds every year, and we have to match that at 10%. And so we spend $100,000 to get $1 million worth of benefit from FAA for, and it's for FAA authorized projects. So airfield, things that have to do with the planes actually taking off and landing and the safety of it. And then like snow equipment and ARF stuff, things like that. So it's really important for us to get that 10,000 boardings. Otherwise, we are completely subject to the whim of FAA for funding.
And whim, I like that.
Yeah, and we're competing with everybody else for
sure.
Projects, and we may not, you know, be able to line the projects up the way we want them to.
And Airport Director Jamie Salter, it was neat to see a picture of the new snow removal equipment that was approved by the commission a while back, and it's apparently made a huge difference in the amount of time they have to spend working out there.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's one of the things FAA does cost share in is a lot of that snow removal equipment. And you know, it's expected by our airlines. Sure. You know, you don't have to go back too far where we had, I'm not going to say sketchy, but very non-consistent service in the wintertime if there were snow events. And that's part of that is because we didn't have adequate snow removal equipment to address things like we needed to. But the expectation of the current carrier we have right now is you're going to have it ready to go. We're going to come in, we're going to land, we're going to let our people off, get our people, and we're gonna take off. And so we have to have adequate equipment to do that. And I think we have it now.
And Michael, finally, we wanted to touch base and let people know that the well rehabilitation program mm-hmm. continues. Jeff Crispin has been working on this, started back in 2019. This is the fourth consecutive right. year. And water wells are very important, but at some yep. point, they become a little bit more than city workers than our can handle as far as rehab and keeping it clean.
Right.
Got to call in the professionals.
So we're calling
sometimes.
In the professionals. We've done 6 to 8, I think, every year for the last 4 years. I think that'll continue, and that's part of it, just getting a deep clean to keep our water flowing efficiently, which then, you know, we just pass those efficiencies on throughout the system. So it makes a lot of sense. It's easier to budget as well. You don't have to wait for wells to go down and then repair it. So
it's if you're less expensive to, planning
right,
ahead.
So get the deep clean and work on the wells. And then that does allow our city staff between, you know, 4 and 5 years to go in there and do regular routine maintenance.
It's been working out well for us. And real quickly, Toby, we're going to have
Can I add one
yes,
thing to that?
Do that.
I really want to stress the importance of this because those people that around in 1991 may remember the drought that caused us to get into the water conservation world that we've been pretty much leading in Kansas ever since. That was a drought. It wasn't a severe drought. The issue, upon reflection, the issue was we weren't taking care of our wells the way we needed to. They weren't as efficient as they should be. We weren't doing stuff like this to have them either rehabbing them in house or professionally rehabbing them. And so it wasn't so much the drought, but more the fact that our wells were only producing at, you know, 30-40% capacity. And so then when the drought hit, it compounded that. So it's extremely important to do stuff like this because when we do hit a drought, we want those wells as efficient as possible. We don't want to have any self-inflicted wounds.